Welcome to the podcast series for AJP Heart and Circulatory Physiology. I'm your host, Kara Hansel-Kean. Today we'll discuss the article by Facundo et al. Titled O-GLCNEC Signaling During Hypertrophy. This article published online March 9, 2012. My guests today are Editor-in-Chief William Stanley, Senior Author Steve Jones, and Leading Expert John Chatham. Let's get started.
Thanks, Kara. Protein modification by phosphorylation, nitrosylation, acetylation regulate various pathways in myocardium that impact physiological function. Now, about 10 years ago, beta-O-linked N-acetylglucosamine, or O-GLCNEC, emerged as a dynamic post-translational modifier of serine and threonine residues and regulating stress responses, and also linked to metabolism. Now, in this study by Facundo et al., they provide evidence to suggest that O-GLCNEC signaling plays a unique role in cardiac hypertrophy. Previous studies have shown that cardiac hypertrophy transcription factor NFAT, or nuclear factor of activated T cells, plays a key role in pathological cardiac hypertrophy. Now, the results of this study link these two things, O-GLCNEC-ylation of NFAT in mice subjected to aortic constriction was demonstrated, and in more controlled in vitro studies, they showed that the stress-induced cardiomyocyte growth is enhanced by this process. Steve, you want to tell us the real take-home message of your study?
Yeah, so I think the essential findings here were that cardiomyocyte hypertrophy can be directed at least acutely by protein GLCNEC ylation, or if we want to just talk about this in a collective, more orally pleasing term, glycosylation, though all of the glycobiologists are probably going mad right now because we're using the term glycosylation to talk about one particular aspect. But I think that's the seminal part, is that we've demonstrated that protein GLCNEC ylation is required for cardiomyocyte growth, at least acutely.
John, what do you see as the strengths and the weaknesses of the study?
It's been known for a while that in response to acute hypertrophy, there is an increased dependence on glycolysis and glucose metabolism by the heart. And what has been lacking for a long time has been sort of whether there's a mechanistic relationship between this increase in glucose use and the development of hypertrophy. In other words, the cause and effect relationship. I think the strength of this study is that the Jones group have really proposed a unique and novel mechanism by which this increase in glucose use could directly be impacting the transcriptional machinery leading to hypertrophy.
So, Steve, this is really an innovative finding, and I think one of the problems everyone in this field has is how you quantify these glycosylated proteins. What do you see as the kind of state-of-the-art and future directions in terms of measurement of GLCNEC ylation?
That's a great question, Bill, and it's certainly one of the painful issues for those of us like John and others in the field. In terms of identifying, you know, what's actually being modified and how flux rates may be altered. I would think that the standard way that most people, be it in the cardiovascular realm or hardcore diabetologists, are looking at protein GLCNEC ylation is with these standard immunoblots. You could think of this like you would think of like a phosphoserine immunoblot, where you run a 1D and transfer it to a membrane, throw in the antibody, and you see a lot of different bands show up. Now, the issue there is that the various clones, and there are actually quite a few now, the two probably most commonly used are a CTD clone and an RL2 clone. And then more recently, I think John, actually, and others, Georgia Tech, had published a paper identifying another promising, I don't know, four to six or so other antibodies. The issues with the antibodies are that they, you know, don't all recognize the same targets. So, you know, there are some proteins that are likely GLCNEC modified, but a particular antibody may not pick up the entire subset. So one of the other things that's been developed in addition to using an antibody-based approach is a biochemical labeling technique. Carolyn Bertozzi and others have really pushed. It's basically a modification of this a click chemistry. Now, the issue here is, or one of the issues is that this is a particularly labile post-translational modification. So we think of phosphorylation as a labile modification, but relatively speaking, phosphorylation is stable compared to the protein GLCNEC ylation. The other disadvantage here is that it's small. It's a monosaccharide, but unlike phosphorylation, it's uncharged. So it's really difficult. And the other biological difficulty in terms of the mass spec separation out of the single protein GLCNEC ylation is the fact that other types of classical glycosylation will have a GlcNAc, albeit the biochemistry is slightly different, but have a GlcNAc potentially on the terminal chain of the oligosaccharide. So you know, there are a lot of pitfalls in doing this, and you know, one has to go through due diligence, even if you use something relatively straightforward like the protein immunoblotting.
Steve, you really scared me off from the field. So it can't be that bad. I mean, John, you've worked in this area for a long time, and clearly these are important reactions. They're fast and they're labile, like you were saying. But where's this field going to go? Because it's all about measurement at this point, I think, to a large extent.
Steve certainly highlighted a lot of the challenges. I think one of the benefits of recent times has been the emergence of newer anti-GlcNAc antibodies that are easier to work with. Early ones, particularly the CTD110.6 clone, was really problematic for immunoprecipitation. And so if you really wanted to try and look at what proteins might be modified, a classical way would have been to immunoprecipitate, immunopurify if you're GlcNAc proteins, and then do some kind of subsequent immunoblotting or mass spec analysis on that pool. Unfortunately, the CTD110 clone was very poor. The efficiency for a number of reasons, was difficult. The newer clones that are available now are much more effective for immunoprecipitation. So you do have a number of tools now that really weren't available in the last 4 or 5 years.
Steve, how do you think this relates to diabetic cardiomyopathy and conditions where there's either too much glucose uptake or impaired glucose oxidation and accumulation of hexoses in the cytosol?
Yeah, that's a great question, one that we encounter, you know, quite often, because particularly when you look at this paper in the context of some of the other recent work from my group and from John's group, looking at the acute cytoprotective benefits of protein GlcNAc alation, i.e. the acute stress response type of issues you alluded to in the introduction. One is always questioned, well, you know, if this is so good and so beneficial, if you take the diabetic context where you have hyperglycemia, well, then you should have increased flux through the hexosamine biosynthetic pathway, more GlcNAc modification, so then why isn't it good to be diabetic? In short, yeah, I don't know that it's necessarily the same thing. You know, in real estate, they always say location, location, location. Here, I think one of the issues may be the targets and or the persistence of the protein GlcNAc signaling. As you might remember, I was somewhat careful in talking about, you know, whether this was something that's important chronically in the context of hypertrophy or in the diabetic heart. So, you know, the short answer is, I don't know. What the role of protein GlcNAc alation that the diabetic heart is. But if you look at data from John's group and from Wolf Dillman's group, the data certainly are suggestive that protein GlcNAc alation is up in various mouse models and rat models of the diabetic heart, and that if you reverse those, you can reverse certain pathologies in the diabetic hearts. One of the things that I think would be of interest to look a bit more closely at is particularly what's modified in the cardiomyocytes and ferreting out the fibroblasts and the endothelial cells and smooth muscle cells from the actual cardiomyocytes. Because my suspicion is that the events taking place are actually quite different in the endothelial cells and fibroblasts versus the cardiomyocytes.
So, John, in terms of overall metabolic regulation, how does this fit into the big picture?
We're all aware that there is many decades of literature showing that there are changes in metabolism in response to a variety of different stress stimuli in the heart. And it's been hard often to link mechanistically those changes in metabolism to actual transcriptional or functional changes in the heart. I think one of the exciting aspects of this GlcNAc field is that we now have a direct mechanism by which changes in metabolism that can directly affect protein function. And it should be noticed that many transcription factors are also directly modified by GlcNAc. So you can have a two level of regulation. You can affect protein function acutely, but then you can also have transcriptional events. And so I think that's an important component now. And it's also worth noting that the GlcNAc molecule itself has not only derived from glucose, the amine group comes from amino acid metabolism, and the acetyl group comes from fatty acid metabolism. So this one sort of modification is a potential way to integrate numerous metabolic signals into one molecule. And so I think that's the exciting part here.
John, Steve, thanks for a really interesting discussion on this important topic. We look forward to more work from the two of you. Kara?
And thanks for listening to this AJP Heart and Circ podcast.